didn't say a little bit about the group with this project is that ideally, at least one representative from each group should talk to me about what their progress before they try to submit. And I'll put some spots on the calendar, avoiding the other two courses that you like for discussing. Oh, you can just, you know, capture me on the hallway, and there's a board there says, we have questions about the project. We're like, okay, let's go for it. Okay. So I will, this will be like, you can see the homework. If you miss a couple points or some other points, then normally I wouldn't send it back to you, so to do it again. But this project will be graded by me, and I'll track all the factors. Okay, if you miss the minus I on the vertex, that's probably the only thing you can miss. I'll look at all the diagram and all the correct and the incorrect ones and all the factors of minus sign trace. If you don't have them correctly ordered such that it looks Lorentz invariant, I'll give back to you says please restore all your spinner index. So the third homework, I tried my best to reduce the amount of calculation that's involved. Ideally, it should be doable in 2 hours with collaboration, because that was a tutorial before and people did get to the end. Okay, so that's not the tough part of the evaluation this week. The tough part is the group project. But you know, the other thing I want to say is it's like a bicycle. Once you learned how to look at the rules, look at the diagram, produce a matrix element, you wouldn't forget. So, and you'll be like, any point, you're like, I know how to do this. And I'll do something like a writing down matrix element today. And this hopefully that enlighten you about something not to do when you do the matrix element. Mostly they are all related about the fermions, the spinner index, and how to contract them, how to get a number out of it, which is what we want. Oh, okay, a function out of it, but not a matrix. Okay. And yes, if you miss something I think it's important when you submit the group project, I will ask you to do it again. Okay? So if you are not very certain, you should come and ask. And, oh, okay. So I want to start with what we started yesterday in the tutorial. This question didn't come up, interestingly. So I decided to ask you, kind of a theme.
What's the time axis?
Oh yeah, okay. This is very funny because I drew it in a way that it's reverse time. And suppose somehow we want to smash photons into Higgs. We don't. But see, I already to draw two, I don't want to erase and just turn it upside down. Some non-realistic diagram about Higgs decay to two photons. You can do it, right? You're going to get a complaint from your collaborators, but you can do it. So, there are four diagrams on the board. A lot of times you are concerned. It's like, do they all contribute? Are they all the same? Are they all different? Are they same for the same process? Are they not for the same process? What diagram should I draw? And further on, questions about if you want to, you know, yeah, exactly. Then you want to subtract and add. But the first thing you should do is to draw all the independent diagrams that all contribute. If you have extra diagram and a missing diagram, that's like the first problem we should resolve. And here is the question to you that I have four diagrams and regarding to four diagrams. What do you think? Are they all independent? Some are independent? Or some must be independent? How many are independent? And your choice is 1, 2, 3, 4. That's easy.
I don't understand the right-hand side diagrams. The left-hand side, you have two, but that's independent, I suppose. But the right-hand side, the top one and the bottom one, I don't understand them.
Why not?
What is happening in the at the bottom? Two photons are going. Okay. No, I got it.
Okay.
I think you have two independent ones, and I think the top, I think the diagonals are equivalent. Like the top is equivalent to the bottom right. The top right is equivalent to the bottom left.
Very good. What are your reasoning?
Because it's all about whether you've got, I guess, the anti-fermion or the fermion going to photon 1 or photon 2. And in the top, wait, hold on. I have to figure out which one's the anti-fermion because time is upside down.
Sure. just give anti-fermion. The fermion will give you the same conclusion. Let's just find something.
Yeah, so in the top left, the fermion is going to photon 2. And same with the bottom right, the fermion's going to photon 2.
Oh, you just flipped the whole diagram. Okay.
That. That's right. The reasoning is that when we're judging different process, same process, same diagram, different diagram. What is interesting is like how the interaction happens. For example, the first diagram, I call this my starting point, origin. Then I have to do this for all the diagrams. Maybe these are all my origin. But then starting with the origin, if I'm attempting to write down the matrix element, but I'm not going to, I'm just saying I have to go this direction. And then after the origin, I met photon 1. And then I met photon 2. And then I go back and make the loop. It's similar. It's the same what you said. I'm just saying it in a different way. So then you look at this one. Then you have to follow the fermion line in the other way. You still meet photon 1 here because photon 1 is coming. And you still meet photon 2 afterwards. And by this logic, actually, you would say there cannot be more than two diagrams because all you can do is 1, 2, and the 2, 1. So the thing is that you might have some technique. You said, if I was swapping two fermions or two photons or something, can give me a new diagram, and if I change the direction of a fermion loop, giving me a new diagram, then you have to be very careful. When you do the thing twice, then it's the same diagram. Then you can either say that I swapping two photon lights. Then indeed, you get the two diagrams that contribute. Oh, you can see I change the direction of the loop and give you also two diagrams. And either way is okay. But when you do too many things, some things get canceled and they go back to your original diagram.
If the diagram was much more complicated than this, how would you know that you're, because if, by even looking at this, you can understand you're flipping. If you say that the Higgs boson thing is the axis of symmetry, you're just flipping it. Straight to that axis of symmetry, so they're equivalent. But if the diagram was much more complicated, how would you just
wait?
Take a long time to.
How can you flip the axis?
I don't know how to explain it from here.
I think you unwind the photon.
If you unwind the right bottom one. So if you rotate that by 180 degrees, you get the top left one.
Okay, yeah, you have all sorts of technique, but I don't think there is a general rule to judge a complicated diagram.
So you have to check all of the saying this one goes to this external thing and that one goes to this external thing.
I think when you get to that order, you have to ask the computer to help. There is a package called a Feynman Calc, and there is another package called a Feynman Art, and you can just say, Feynman art parameters, then it will alter the, all the topological inequivalent graph. Check that out. At some point, it's beyond the human's ability, right?
What's one's name? Feynman.
Calc.
Oh,
calculus. Oh, Feynman cult will be a thing. I wouldn't have been out of cult. He has. I have a problem with Feynman. That's okay. So to introduce to today's topic, that's yesterday's topic. To introduce to the topic, great. So you, I'm not. First, I don't know the subject that much, and I can't teach you renormalization in one day. So, and you have scheduled at least 4 lectures with Francois to lead you to the beautiful theory of renormalization, renormalization group, and the Wilsonian method, blah, blah, blah. And he's a very, very good lecturer. He also wants the student to ask questions all the time, so now you grant his wishes. Perfect. And I think, well, statistically speaking, your statistical physics course should involve renormalization, right? So you will have 2 courses coming and devoting at least, let's say, 7 or 8 lectures on the topic. So I'm just going to try to say for QED alone and then demonstrate some general technique. And I'll do the calculation in the way that in your 3rd homework, which is not doing the calculation, they're showing some results. But I want to introduce a important technique that maybe make even more less sense than taking a momentum cutoff. But it's a technique that everybody does. So today's goal is, I guess, talking about something general. And talking something specific. This seems very bad. Okay, O is QED. Renormalizing. So to introduce this topic, Dan is coming back. And it's my question, but it involves Dan. Says, what's in common between learning QFT from Dan and playing Quidditch in Hogwarts?
You don't have to respond to the rules.
What? I like independent answers, but I didn't hear your answer.
I just said you don't understand the rules sometimes.
Oh, I see. No, I did it. See, you in both cases you need a broomstick. In one case, you have to sweep up down the infinities, and the other one, you have to write it. Okay, so let's go. The general thing is very good. The general thing always works. You probably do this for every single theory that you see, okay? So we're going to have to write down a bunch of definitions. Which is, I guess, not ideal, but let's define a bunch of things. You will see a Feynman diagram. Wait. Okay. Yes. No. That will be totally disaster if I just list the definition to you. By the 3rd, you probably fall asleep. So, change of strategy. Look at this diagram. He says to Robert. And tell me what different ingredients are there.
Photons.
What kind of photons?
Ones that interact with fermions.
That's like all photons. But there are 2 different kinds of photons. And one kind we care about the propagator, the other one we don't.
Oh, internal and external?
Very good. Perfect. See, this is more fun. So there is the number of external. And then the other ones we'll call it a propagator because we care about the propagator. I'm not going to write down that. Propagator. We really like the letter P. Propagator. Okay, what else do we have here?
Fermions, obviously.
Fermion propagator?
Where's the time direction?
I don't know, like if the meat is here, I would say the time direction would be this way. As much as I know about a T-Rex. Electron propagator. Yeah, it's okay, I'm not writing propagator again. Clearly electron. Okay, what else do we have? What other ingredients will... Yeah, that's fine. We will only care about electron propagation because that's what we compute, that's what we use. If you do the other one, you will get the same answer. Ah, very good. Who says loop? Loop, very good. Loop. Loop is important. Number of loop. Keep going. It's kind of important. It contributes all this. Yes. Vertices. This horrendous factors in QED don't come from the vertices. Okay, I know that one doesn't contain this, but if you look at the first three, it almost screaming says I should have something else in the general diagram, not that one. If you look at this, you look at this list, forget about that diagram. Now you think about a generic diagram. Seems I'm missing something.
The external...
scalar field? I don't know.
Okay, we're in QED. That's where we are today. Okay? So now I have a bunch of definitions. So... there are a bunch of definitions, and what we care is how that. Okay, I'm gonna ask a question and hide this cute thing so we don't stare at it. The question is this T-Rex very scary?
What?
Is this T-Rex very scary and should you run away?
Weird to go from two photons to one photon?
That's exactly my point, is that we're gonna see an example with another example with two photon, the one photon, and we'll make some conclusions, okay? But I think about that, should we be scared to run away, and we'll be like, oh, it's okay. All right. So when we talk about renormalization, well, of course, if you say finite things, you still renormalize, but we care more about the infinity thing. Like you remember what's under the carpet and it's time to leave the carpet and then unearth something. So we're gonna focus on something called the superficial divergence. Because some of them, they look divergent, but for some other list of reasons, they end up not to be divergent or not as badly as you think, and all sorts of things happen. So this is why it's called the superficial. And they say the superficial divergence, how do we do this, let's say, by evaluating a matrix element, what would you call the superficial divergence? Like when Dan says, this diagram diverged like lambda square. Where did he get that?
Did he make a cutoff and then he took the cutoff?
If you off, yeah, and then what do we do with that cutoff such that
infinity maybe? Or yeah.
That's afterward. Okay. But before,
take the derivatives.
The other way, take the integral.
Thinking about the Casimir's problem.
So remember that you have some integral to do, some propagator. Mm-hmm. over here and some random, I don't know, vertex, whatever is doing up there. I mean, something control, like fermion propagator, for example, control field goes away. But the point is, what do we care about this if we only care about the power of lambda? Like, do we actually do this complete matrix element, all this loop integral, and find the final answer, and then find out this? Or what something can do in the first glance? What kind of variable in this propagator is the variesome one?
Is the what?
Is variesome that we could explode to infinity?
Anything in the numerator.
Huh? Momentum. See? Now it's back. So the idea is that so somehow what people does is really just counting the momentum upstairs and momentum downstairs, and you would get some idea. For example, this had better come from like this, right? And then you cut off, you got this explosion. So very good. So this P is defined to be power of P, which is momentum. And you get a power of P in the numerator. And then you get a power of P in the denominator. Like a post-integral, like an integral also counts as some momentum. Like it depends on how many you're doing. So this one probably counts, of course, right? This one will produce P to the 4 if I integrated over 1. So this thing counts as 4 power. And then you have to count everything. Okay, so.
After the integration or before?
After. So integral itself will contribute to momentum, right? As I said, if we focus on the integration, this will give me P to the 4. Okay, very good. So of course, what we should do is actually count it. So let's see. Since we just discussed this, so how many integrals do you think we will have? For any matrix element, how many integral of that will we have? What it depends on, what it decides on, the that
number of loops.
Number of loops, right? Okay, so very good. And now we have let me write you some, don't mind me the minus signs, it's I wouldn't be able to remember, but I'll give you some propagator rules. Right? Okay. Let's see. Maybe let's count the photon first. How many photon? How many powers of P the photon propagator will contribute? 2 for each propagator.
Wait.
Well,
yeah, you're right.
And what about a fermion?
3.
Yeah. Okay. See, there is a minus sign here. So let's count the numerator of a fermion propagator. 1. And then let's count the denominator. 2, which because it's the same as the photon.
Oh, because we're ignoring the integral part for the.
We're doing. No, this is the. Okay. Right? If you're in the loop, then it's bad news for this superficial divergence. Well, yeah, downstairs is kind of helping. You have more propagators. Okay, is it okay? I just erased this and it says that in total, if you have a fermion propagator, you contribute a -1. Okay. Well, loop propagators. I know this T-Rex is cute, but who wants to count the number of loops and the propagators in this? Yeah.
I'm not. Question for colorization.
Okay.
When you say the number of propagators, does it include the propagators in the loop, or?
Mm-hmm. Every single propagator. This one, that one, that one, that one. I mean, you want.
Including the loop, like the propagators in the loop, or?
This one, this one, this one, this one, that one, that one. Isn't that how you write down the matrix element? You have to write down every single propagator.
You're referring to like L being the loop part and propagator being the P being the non-loop part.
What?
Because you're counting the number of, okay, never mind.
Number of loop. This is one big loop, one. And then you can, your loops are easier to count, but who is going to try to figure out how many propagators are there? Okay. See that you can see that this is not ideal method.
14, I think.
14, okay. 14. So what's D? What's the D for that one? What's D for that is? Your X.
Subtraction is tough. Hold on one
second. No, it's just like if you count properly, in another way. You can get that the answer of that diagram in 2 seconds.
Zero.
It's not zero.
I did it wrong. I counted wrong.
Okay, prove that you should not count these things on the gigantic diagram. Okay, so let's see what I want to tell you first. Okay. Okay, so. Each vertex. Oh, I have vertex here too. How many photon lines I get out of each vertex?
One.
Okay, this is the calculation for photon. One times one. Okay, but if I don't look at the vertex, I just really want to count how many photon lines are there. Okay? So we can come back to this. How many photon lines are there? Using this language.
N gamma.
Right? It makes sense. If you're an external lab, then each of them contributing to one leg, one photon, two photon. Same as the number of external leg. What about the propagator? I don't have a propagator. Okay, here we go. No.
Are we pretending the Higgs is a photon here?
No.
Wait, why is the number of vertices then the number of photons?
Oh, we're talking about QE. Look at this diagram. This diagram has both internal and external, also known as the QED vertex correction diagram that you have drawn yesterday, right? Look at this diagram. This one, of course, contributed to one photon line for each of them. But what about a propagator?
Just two times the number of.
Right? It's different from the internal line because this, if you're a propagator, you get connected to two vertex. So in our counting, if each vertex contributed one, propagator had a better contributed two, because propagator has two endings. Okay, very good. Now let's do electro. What's different? What's the difference? Two, right? Each vertex has two lines. We always know that because otherwise you have run into the trouble, have no spinner index to contract, and you're like, all hell break loose, so to speak. So, I mean, is there any change on the other side? It shouldn't, right? Which is counting electron lines. It still has external lines, still have propagate, and the propagator is still correct, connected to two vertex. So.
Wait, what are we counting here? Are we saying the number of, we're counting the number of vertices?
We're saying that this equation holds, because on left-hand side, we counted the electron lines coming out of the vertex. And on the other hand, we counted the religious by counting.
Is this just for this particular diagram? Why are we?
This is always true for any QED diagram. If you want, look. It's very easy to draw you a more complicated QED diagram, okay? I claim that it works for this too. Okay, what else do we have? That's something you actually have it in your pocket. You might just not remember. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what do we do? I claim this is true. Okay, that's, you're not gonna like that. Okay. So what I claim is I start with one vertex. It's clearly that that it has no propagator. I can draw things on it, but if I have one vertex, there's no propagator. None, not any kind. Yeah? That's believable? And now I add another vertex. I claim whenever I add a vertex, I have to get a one internal propagator. For each of the vertex I add, I want it to be connected and no loop, just connected like a tree. If I want to draw a tree diagram that's completely connected with all my vertices, then each vertex I add, if I want to keep things connected, there had better be a propagator. So I can do one more time. Vertex, I can connect this one. I mean, you can connect something else, but that one is the close, right? So you buy it?
What if your photon was your external line?
What are you talking about? Are we talking about this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let me just think. This is a vertex.
I'm just saying, see, I can draw more. Don't believe me, I can draw more. Here's a vertex. And how can I make this vertex connect to the Rice diagram? You have to add a propagator.
Okay, you should probably continue and see what's the point.
The point is now I have an equation. The propagator together, doesn't matter what I connect, is equals to V minus 1 for a tree. Yeah? The first vertex doesn't need any propagator. For any more vertices, you need a propagator. And now you want to meet, like you want to make a loop, right? Otherwise, it's not as interesting. So now you say, ha, I want to add a loop. Well, for every single loop you add, propagator goes up too. Right? This is the graphic theory, right? The graph theory says that the internal line equals, it's really just this. I don't know if you, okay, you might have seen this version. It's a theorem in graph theory, and I just proved it. I say I'll build my graph from one vertex. There's absolutely nothing. And if I want to add a vertex in my diagram, it'll contribute. You have to add a propagator too. Otherwise, they're not connected. And I keep doing that, finish up with my vertex. And now I say, oh, I want to study three loop. Well, if you study three loop, your propagator will go up by 3.2. I is internal lines represented by two properties. It's just that you might have seen that formula before.
Yeah.
Can you give me the big picture? What are you counting these stuff?
I know, right? Now I'm giving you. Now you have three equations. They related things to these things, which are hard to count, hard to count, hard to count. And then you look at this side, external legs show up. External legs. I mean, how hard is it to count a graph with external legs? Unless you're one of those like bacteria has like 100 legs, something. Normally, external legs are much easier to count, right? Okay, I'm not gonna show you. It's a completely algebra. Just chuck all these three formula into that thing. You'll get something nice, which looks like this. I have no intuition about this. That's why I'll just go write it out. That's why if I have some intuition of this, I wouldn't tell you all this winding story. The intuition we have is this, counting momentum. The intuition we have is how to count on the graph. And the hula this shows up says,
this is kind of serendipitous because you have three equations, four unknowns, but when you plug that in, you get rid of all four unknowns.
It's so ridiculous that you should do the calculation. All you should look at in the notes. I did the calculation.
Yeah, I know, but it's interesting.
Right? It's certainly interesting that this come out. But if this comes out, right? Now you can tell me what's the D for that T-Rex, which has two photons going to one photon.
Can we see the T-Rex thing?
See, this disappeared. Yeah, well, this one says three, you get a one.
Yeah, it turns out there were 13 electron propagators, not 14. And then I redid it and I got one as well.
Okay, next time I'll make it more ambiguous so you can't count. Because that's not what I want you to do in the course.
Bigger dinosaur.
Okay. So now, if you look at this, it says, wow, if I add some external legs, then it's no. If you add like a 5 or 10, then it's not going to be divergent. It's clear. The question is, well, the point is, now we are in a finite problem. See? This is an infinite problem. You're just adding loops. I mean, you are always going to be divergent. But now you know that there is a finite subset that is divergent. In fact, it's so finite. I can write down all of them for you. Let's start with, okay, we're going to count from the highest number, which is 4, and going down by adding legs. So, helps me count. Starting with 4, what diagram do I have?
Wait, what do you mean starting with
4? From D equals 4, what diagrams do I have?
2 to
2
zero.
What? D equals 4. Solve this equation for D equals 4. Consider realistic situation.
Zero photons.
We don't know. We don't care what happens. But this thing clearly we don't care, right? Why would you care about this thing? It's a vacuum diagram. It's going to be canceled. No, yeah, very divergent, very careless. So let's move on to D equals 3. One photon. And do we care about this? No, don't care. Right? So far life is good.
it's a disconnected diagram.
No, it's a tadpole, and for the best reason for QED is that this tadpole is going to produce a counter term like this, right?
Okay.
And this is certainly not a gauging error.
Okay.
Okay. Move on. Carry on. D equals 2. What happens? 2 photons. See, we're doing good. And this is extremely important, called a vacuum polarization. And will be showing up in your last homework. So I don't care in this lecture anymore. So the next one, okay, D equals 1.
3 photons, 2 electrons.
Yeah, you get 2. And you're like, this is my T-Rex. And this. And this we will do today. This is called the mass renormalization, right? Okay, now you are down to D equals 0.
Why is it called the mass renormalization? Why is it called the mass renormalization?
Because if you ignore what's happening in the middle, it's like this.
Okay, fair enough.
Right? And yeah, naming system is always based on what we know. I don't know how people like at a first name anything. Anyway, D equals 0.
2 electrons, 1 photon, 4 photons.
Ah. You know, you get very good at this. And then you have this. And this. Interestingly, you have to read Haskin 10.2 something. Oh, actually, there is. Oh, I posted some. Zhong Zhixianyu is a guy who solved most of the problems in Haskin and tacked it up as a solution. So it's posted. And if you look at the 10.2, his solution, he will tell you this is actually finite. Like something funny thing happens. It's supposed to be logarithmically divergent. But actually, it's finite. It's not an easy computation, not at all to show that. But it's shown. And I want to talk more about the T-Rex, so I can't talk about that. And this is the so-called vertex correction. And this is very interesting. It seems to be very important, but turns out it's you can cleverly avoid this diagram, at least. So we'll briefly talk about this. Okay. We're done. We're down to D equals 0. Once you have minus 1, everything is finite.
Should all these diagrams be physically explicable? Because, for example, the last one, if you say your particle and antiparticle annihilate into a photon, that is physically not viable, is it?
Sometimes you are just purely interested in the three-point correlation function and don't care about the scattering.
Is it like because maybe it would be inside another diagram or?
Oh, you would definitely be inside another diagram. So it's just the three-point correlation. I can give me a few minutes. I'll show you that why people might be interested in that diagram.
Is it because you could change the time axis and look at it as like an a photon scattering an electron?
That thing just like if it's a photon and a two thing, that's just zero if physically. But sometimes we care about non-physical things.
Okay.
And okay. Before we take a break, I want to show you that this T-Rex is not scary. Okay? The proposed calculation is like this. Okay. So it's not an easy calculation. So if you get lost in the calculation, that's perfectly understandable. But the idea is that for everything goes this way, there's going to be a thing going that way. For every diagram you draw like this, you can draw a diagram like that. For every T-Rex like this, you can just flip the fermion-2 loop and draw another T-Rex. Sometimes you can call it anti-T-Rex. I'll see in which sense. But I'll change the arrows because my notes is one way and this is not something I can do on the spot. So this is a very interesting fact, is that I'll label some momentum and you will know that they are all taken care that the R following all the momentum conservation thing. The interesting thing is that this is a crazy part, is that you can label your momentum this way. And you're like, wow, that's crazy. Why would you want your loop momentum to be minus k, right? But if you do that precise choice, you realize all the momentums are flipped. So otherwise, you will be facing two matrix elements that you have no idea how to massage them to somewhere. Okay, so this choice, clever choice of a momentum will make sure that you stop caring about the propagator except the minus sign you introduced. Okay, now I'm going to write this element. Okay, I'll write this one exceedingly slow because this is related to your project. So whenever you have a problem, I'm only going to write for the fermion loop. The three photons, you can just attach them. So this is how my approach of handling a fermion loop. That I will, this is also useful when you have fermion to fermion scattering and you have a fermion propagator in the middle. So I will pick a point that says my journey starts here. Sometimes I will pick it in the middle of the propagator for no reason, but now if I go this way, remember your arrow of your, this is called the journey to success. If you write the other way, you get the journey of a disaster that you have to fix things later. It's not incorrect. It's just you will have, good luck. Okay, so then you see, I see a vertex. I'm only going to write the things that are not a constant in it, in the matrix. There's going to be some minus IE to the 3, but I don't care. Because they share the same thing. So I'm going to say I see a vertex, very good. And I'm going to see this line. This line is the fermion propagator with K. So you kind of write it like that, but I can. I'll show you what this stands for because it's very long. You don't really want me to write it up. And then And the reason we can do this is because it's a loop. I mean, I can call my variable k, you can call it a minus k, no problem. Everything is integrated. Okay, then I'm on the propagator, right? So I move it to the propagator. I was like, this is all done. And I see another vertex. Vertex, you have to be very alert with a QED vertex because you have to follow the order. And then after the vertex, you're like, oh, another fermion propagator with a different momentum. Are there, okay, I should keep it a slush. Okay? Then we continue our journey. And, oh, here, right? I mean, this is a pattern, right? You will see a vertex, say a propagator. Another vertex, a propagator. I mean, it always goes like that. There's no way you're going to say propagator, propagator. That doesn't make any sense. That it's one propagator. It doesn't make even less sense. You say two vertexes in a row. So there should be always, it should be always this pattern. And then you continue your journey. You get this.
When are we taking the trace of this?
You should do the quiz on fermion loop. Okay?
Should we have the quick sign-in instead of gamma? Because
I know, but they are not the problematic ones. Right? They're just going these that's a good point, but it's just I can choose them to just hanging out there. But it's not gonna kill me because what's worrisome is the trace. Those are just chilling out. The point is I want to compare the diagram for this and the diagram for that. So they are all gonna share this. And that's why I'm gonna throw it away. Well, of course, I do this just because I know what's my answer. And if you know my answer, you will also throw it. If I don't know the answer, I wouldn't do that. Okay, so puzzling trace number one. Okay. Then you will just do it again for the other one. And same strategy. You're going to pass gamma mu.
Which direction? Oh, are we going around the same direction?
No, because the other loop is going the other direction. So you can't go the same direction. And I'm not going to do it step by step anymore.
Do we start at a different point? Or do we still label it still the same mu, nu, and rho?
Yeah, the label has to be the same because that's the external let. That's our experimentalist. We don't want to upset.
Does it matter if we start at a different point?
Nope. It doesn't, but it's just like if I do this, then it's easier to show you what I want to show you. Okay? It's just in this particular. I pick like this point to go the other way. Well, it's kind of symmetric, but otherwise, it's just to support my claim later.
Why should our journey be in the opposite direction of the?
Because. Come to my Wednesday office hour because that could have become your interview question. Okay.
Oh no! What's
that's an interview question. I can answer you later because it kind of takes some time. I don't have time. Time is the essence of everything. Anyway, the point is, look at this two expression. What do you see? Can you see anything? I mean, physically. Is it raised high enough? Did I write with my?
Is one of the arguments for the propagators in the expression just k?
Huh? What?
The arguments of the k minus p1.
Ooh, whoa, very good. Very good. This is just my, very good.
First one should be p1 minus k and then.
Ah, very good. Perfect. Yes, that's precisely, that is chosen that way. Thank you. Okay, very good. So let's stare at this a little bit. Okay, maybe it's not completely apparent yet. I'm going to move the thing I started with the thing to the end. Oh, actually, if I choose the other point to start, I will do better. So if I choose the same point, but if I choose here, no. Yeah, I want to see that one at the end. Okay. This point would be better in this particular case. But anyway, stare at these two monster traces. What do you notice? Is there anything about this that's enlightening?
Is one a negative of the other?
One of them is conjugate.
Right? Look, this is gamma nu, that's gamma nu, this is... Exactly! The order is reversed. Now, we open our gamma... Actually, Wikipedia. Wikipedia is pretty good. You open Wikipedia, then you realize this thing is equal to this thing reversed. It's actually not that hard to prove because we can take a dagger which doesn't change trace and introduce a bunch of gamma and then you can just flip to the other. Okay? Because you know the trace thing can pull things around the cyclic. Anyway, you're like, wow, these two sheets are basically the same, except the momentum will spit out some minor signs. And since there is odd number of photons coming out, it will spit up odd number of minor signs to make these two exactly cancel. So that T-Rex is not scary, because when you draw that T-Rex, you have to draw the anti-T-Rex, and it will collide and become zero.
Epsilon in the denominator, when we take the conjugate, wouldn't you have minus I epsilon?
Why might, no, I'm all, the denominator are all out of the trace. We only care about the inside the trace. I'm only using this for the trace.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I think what she meant was, if you take the dagger of propagator, what does it become?
I'm not taking the dagger of the propagator. Can I just change this and throw away the denominator? Because the denominator would be the shared. They would be having the same denominator.
The
propagators, numerators are like p plus m. So why would they?
Yeah, I know I can't get by with that. But if you think about this plus m, you still, okay. Then I introduce another identity. Trace of all the number of gamma mu is zero. That you can look at in Wikipedia and see how it's proved. It's very nicely proved and I can't remember. So that means when you pick, you have three gamma coming from the vertex, and in order to avoid that odd gamma, you have to pick one thing come with gamma and the two thing doesn't. All three come, you know, like you have to work out the pairing. Like you have at most eight choices, right? You can either choose k. If I break it in part, I can choose this to be k, this to be m, this to be k, and stuff like that. That vanish because of that trace. You can only choose in a way that you choose all the number of gamma, such that this works. Okay, that's a very simple point. And yeah, sure, let's take a break and then come back with some renormalization. Yeah, it's not an easy computation. And you really need to sit down and draw the two diagram, write down your fermion loop, stare at them, remember to pick your momentum to be correctly, and that the rest is just apply a bunch of gamma matrices identities. And unfortunately, this is not on the notes. I haven't, I think just, anyway, take the break. So, you didn't talk about this in the scalar case. Says we start with in Lagrangian. Like this. Plus whatever. Okay, so then remember what Dan says, that you should check that your vacuum, like LSST, make some assumptions, and apparently I'll just write the photo, the scalar version, because the fermion version wouldn't be too different. Might be a U somewhere or whatever. Okay, the idea is that we as theorists, apparently are very naive. We write down our Lagrangian and then we study the LSD. So we have no idea what LSD wants. And LSD says, but to use my formalism that we make some assumptions, so we must shift and rescale, right? And if we shift and rescale, you end up with a bunch of phase. People call them Z's. So you just end up with a bunch of things because you are rescaling. So every term gets some rescale coefficient. They are called a Z. It's like the end of the alphabet, like a doomsday. But anyway, that's what you have seen, is that the shift and the rescaling is going to give you something, but at least this thing agree with LSC, which is nice. A question. So in the scalar case, that you have this term, and then you somehow develop some new term called a Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi?
Yeah, Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi, right? Remember? How come we don't have new terms? How come we shift and rescue and we were so confident we're not going to get new terms? They all look exactly the same. With some coefficient. You want, I can give you a hint.
Maybe it's like an effective theory, and there's a bunch of other terms, and we just collect them into those higher orders.
Which cyber?
Huh?
Psi is 3 by 2, so cyber psi is 3, and AMU is 1, so it's 4. Mass dimension 4, so it's similar to 5-4 theory, which does not have extra terms.
Ooh. And why there is no X term from the kinetic term? The mass term?
L is a scalar, but that's not a scalar.
Oh, okay. Interesting. No, those are very good answers, but the answer I'm looking for is that what's the property of a Lagrangian we write down? gauge invariant. We already write down every single gauge invariant term that's there. So you're not going to shift the truth and from the new gauge invariant term. If that exists, theorists would already say, whoa, new interaction term. Okay, that's very important. Always keep the gauge invariant thing in your mind, okay? So, this part, I'm not happy to write down. So this is the free Lagrangian. Then there is some splitting when you have that Lagrangian. And you see you can split it into the free term, and then the term actually interacting. And a bunch of things called a counter term. Like they all look really weird. Like they are counting as interaction, but there is only two field. So they have very weird fermion, like a Feynman. And they say we are false to add the counter term because of this LAC argument. And you realize we have four Z's to determine. Here's Z psi, Za, that normalize our field. I don't know where the re come from. Bear with me, there are four of them. And we want to determine them. And of course, the thing we want is that it'll go back to one. But if we don't perturb. And then there is four Z's to determine. So how many conditions we have? We'd better have four. No? Right? So what a physical condition we have? What's the physical things we can measure and so we can actually determine these things? Scattering thing, okay, sure. You got this one, right? Or somewhat like that one, but so basically you can do a scattering experiment will sort of determines your coupling. Physical coupling. And what else? What else can we do?
Z1?
No. That's just Zi, and the I runs through these four things. Otherwise, I have to write it four times.
Wait, so you can measure all of them just by scattering? Or just one of
them? No, I'm asking. Mass. Mass of
some like of the electron.
It's not physical.
Mass gotta be physical. I can step on the weight scale when I realize I'm heavier than before. So mass is very physical. Okay. What else? Charge? What charge we got? Okay, the other two is very funny. But where is this? So remember, do you remember how we write this term down? How come the coefficient is E? From the U1 symmetry. So we say, this coefficient had better be E, otherwise
it doesn't cancel out the gauge.
It's not gauge invariant. Wait, it's not a gauge invariant. So if now you stare at these two new terms, what would you get? We tried that hard to keep these two terms under control. Better be equal, Otherwise, you break the gauge symmetry. We don't know what we're talking about again. Right? So, gauge symmetry gives me one thing. Well, James, remember like it, David always say the gauge, one gauge symmetry give you two things, and then you have, that's an argument, a degree of freedom of minus two times gauge symmetry. Similar this one. The other condition is given by, keep the photon still massless. So, is zero. It's zero. But you started with a zero mass photon. You don't know like all this crap is happening if it's going to stay at zero. Right? So you have to keep it at zero.
Where did the photon sitting in the electromagnetic terabyte? Yeah, that's right. So how did we get mass of photon equal to zero from that? Like you calculated this two-point function. Yes, but like what was your argument here? You calculate this correlation function.
You get a propagator and you look at the denominator and you make sure the pole is still at it.
This was the argument here too?
That's the argument. Is the, all this like a physical thing is all about this chilling lemon. Like, hey, what's the most relaxing fruit?
What?
Most relaxing fruit. Yeah. Don't you have a chilling lemon formula?
What?
Chilling lemon.
Spectral dense. Spectral.
Have chilling lemon? Like, I can't. What is it called? Isn't it got a chilling lemon? See? Chilling lemon. Okay, chilling lemon tells us that you're looking for the pole, and the pole is at the physical mass. You look at the residue is I, something like that, right? No?
How do you spell it?
You asked me for spelling? Really?
I spell very bad.
Excuse me? Yeah. Yeah, it is a spelling bee. I don't know, actually, but he spells really well. But basically, this chilling lemon gives us a lot of a physical mass. Okay. So that's very good. What else do? Okay, well now, do I have a, yeah, okay, let's do it. Okay, now is the crazy part is actually computer one, right? As I said, that your homework is not scary. All the calculation I skipped, you're gonna skip it in your homework too. Do I need this one? No, I don't need that one. That's for you and your homework. All right. So remember this thing. I don't know. If you want, I can review for you. Remember this thing? No, Mar? You're like, what is this? Okay. Yeah. The dandy to tell me that he went a little fast for the last lecture. So okay. So the idea is, yeah, so this thing is our propagator, right? But in order to consider a two-point function, it could be something going on in the middle. And then something in the middle is named the minus I sigma at a P squared. Very creative name. And then you're like, I'm seeing one propagator, whatever is going on is there, and then another propagator. This just represents what happens in that. Okay? Keep going. And then you see, well, there could be two things going on, and then that will be still basically a propagator, so I should work it out. And what do you think will happen? We'll have a propagator, this ball in the middle, and there's a propagator, another ball in the middle, and another propagator. Yeah? If I add another one, it'd be another ball, another propagator. So this reminds me of long time ago, I do this, right? You don't have to remember what it looks it is, but it eventually looks like this. So it's a geometry series. So this is something called the 1PI diagram that you will return to in QFT2. But the idea is that without knowing what is the result, I'll give it a name. But now what it enabled me to is to resum this series, starting with the propagator as my A, and 1 minus x, but the x is this thing. Remember, every time you get a ball, and you get another propagator. And you're like, some algebra leader. It's not a hard algebra. And you will see this pops up.
How do you know your sigma p squared is less than 1?
Huh? I don't know. It might be infinity.
Because the geometric series thing that you use.
We're talking about renormalization, and now you're respecting all these rules? We're talking about renormalization. We're going to be like looking at all this infinity, and now I'm going to do even crazier things than this. So leave this with this and see if you can leave with the next one. Okay? So the idea is this contributes to the physical mass. Chilling Lemon tell me that this is mass physics square. It is whatever happened in that ball is contributing the mass. And of course you say, ha, what if I'm lucky? And when I write down my formula, that is the physical mass. And you have some conditions, you'd better send this equals 0, and send the derivative to be 0 so that you get that residue.
Does every cos m equals m physical?
That's right. That's being like super lucky when you write down the Lagrange.
Wait, what's
this
sigma pi?
The residue.
Where are we taking the residues? When you take residues, when you take a contour integral?
Okay, whatever is on the numerator. But this has to be true for it to be I. This you can look at the dense nodes. I think I should. Because you can see I'm not talking about the fermions at this point. Okay, now I can finally talk about my fermion. Electron propagator. And now my I sigma thing is going to be this plus this. Okay, what am I missing? This is the original one. What's the lowest order 1PI? Lowest order is propagator. What's the next lowest order? How should I modify this? How should I modify this to get something that is not at the zero order? Like this is the counter term. What is counter term together with?
It's with the 1PI. It's with the.
This is just a pure propagator. What's the next level? I have a one loop. Okay, so now it's like computation of this one loop diagram. Oh dear Lord. Okay, how do I do this? So okay, I'll write down the matrix element because that we do care. Okay, so this is a loop, there is a four integral. Sometimes people write a D bar, same idea as the H bar. Okay, and then you can start with some gamma mu. And you see some propagator carrying momentum, which is not the loop momentum, and then you have two propagators. So this one is easier than the other one because there's no trace, there's no minus sign. You just go from this side to the other side.
Wait, what's that K? Is that K multiplied by these guys, or is that K?
K?
In the denominator, you have M squared and then K squared. Okay.
Two propagators. Okay. So I mean, what's the, like, what's the chance that you want me to do this on board? You might want me to do it because then you can take a nap. But let's not do that. The thing that was about the loop integral is there are some Feynman formulas that you can combine two denominators into one, right? And then you can do some shift of the momentum. And then you can shift the momentum. And then, okay, so I'll skip those two. Don't worry, I'm not asking you to do this in your homework, okay? So you are skipping this with me. And this is some end result with some new momentum integral to do. And well, it's nice, right? And everything else spits out, and the only thing you care about is this. And this is something truly bizarre happens. But to look at this, so how do I do this integral?
Wait a second. Isn't there a lot hidden in that delta?
Yeah, delta is hidden a bunch of things, but they are not going to give me terms that I care on the order I care. So yeah, they remain being hidden. Okay. Yes, you are very right. If you go through the calculation, you will see. I think it's, yeah, I think in the notes, that so you would recover precisely what's that.
Why do you have this identity? What is this identity?
Coming from the Feynman procedure. Remember this thing? Okay, I'll write it then. But it's something turn the, you can combine the, all these, denominator together, but you introduce some new integral. But since your integral is from 0 to 1, it's certainly better than another 4 momentum. That's a famous idea. Okay, so people stare at this. People were like, wow, what can we do, right? And I have no idea who take the initiative to do this, but they realize we are just unfortunate. If you don't live in 4 dimension, but say you live in 4 minus epsilon dimension, then this thing can be integrated. But the good news is it can be integrated. Bad news is you living on this 4 minus epsilon dimension, and this is the very well-known procedure called dimensional regularization. Is to go to a dimension that you don't leave, but you can do that integral analytically, and then trying to go back to 4. And then you will face some infinities, and those you got exactly the infinity we're looking for in those days. Yeah.
Does anyone at all do research on like looking into dimensional regularization and seeing if it could have like physical implications, like if there could be like a tiny little fractional dimension that, you know.
I'm sure somebody looked into it. First, I'm not that somebody, and second, I don't know that.
Okay.
So like your clue ends with me. I'm sure people try. You know, a fractional dimension would be very exciting and just not discovered. Like a Susie. So, I'll write out one to show you that why this thing is so desirable. It's very desirable, it is. Like, it's almost always integratable. Unless you're so unfortunate, leaving D equals 4. then you are just screwed, right? But some gamma constant. Leading order, definitely leading when x is epsilon, right? Certainly leading. So, yeah, so that's what people do. And you can also get something out of this because C, D equals 4. What's that, right? So we get some other things. Doing some expansions around this epsilon. But when that's all settled, which means we're going to take that thing, integrate it this, and then integrate it over z again. I don't require you to do that. So after dust all settle, then you get this result. And the people all agree. As long as we assume we don't leave in for exact dimensions. And then, so that's the dust from the loop integral. But from the counter terms, yeah, it's that thing. That's the d equals 4 minus epsilon. So you can see that we are guaranteed some infinite results. And now if we want this to have all these realistic mass equals physical mass thing, we can extract the psi from the derivative constraint and extract Zm from the equals zero constraint. Okay, so you do extract something, and you can use this z for some purpose. And see, the thing I calculate is not very interesting. Okay, that is nice, because that is equals to ze. And the mass has something not interesting. What's interesting is for you to do in the homework. Without going through any of those tedious calculations. What is interesting is I'll point it out to you. Okay, so this is a conversation after you complete all your group project. Okay, it says the help came. Everything is caught except one. No, all are caught. No, the electric charge running away as things get heated. So what are you going to tell me? Is this okay? So, what is the homework about? Is not about doing all these loop integrals. I probably will ask you to write down the matrix element. But the thing is, once you go to this d dimension, what do you know about like a scalar is dimension one, photon is dimension one, spinner is dimension 3/2. They all go down the drain. So you have to recompute them. And while you do that, you will realize you no longer have a constant, dimensionless coupling. It's not a constant, it runs. So that will come into play. Okay? And that so you have to relate this and something actually dimensionless. And then you can use the definition of this doing derivative respect to log mu thing to actually compute the beta function. And as you know, Sean Tooling, one of our standard model lecturers, says if you want to be a better person, you should calculate a beta function. So Here we go.
Right.
If you want to be a better person, you should calculate a better function. And that is your third homework.